Welcome back to the program. You know, for almost 20 years, Bill Clinton has been a part of American political life. His personality and policies have shaped our politics and reshaped the Democratic Party. Arguably, it paved the way for Barack Obama to usher in a new generation of Democratic leadership. Bill Clinton's voice during the recent presidential campaign was often shrill and angry. Now that that campaign is over, Hillary Clinton is Secretary of State, and President Obama is making his own mark. What role is left for Bill Clinton, and how is he really settling into his emeritus years? That was the subject of a cover story that appeared Sunday in the New York Times Magazine, written by New York Times reporter Peter Baker, and it is my pleasure to have Peter Baker back here on the program. Peter, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Great to have you. There is a certain, at least in my reading of it, a certain melancholy quality almost to reading about Bill Clinton's life at this point. Is that something you took away from this?
I think it's a fair characterization. I think, you know, as he himself put it on the day that Barack Obama was inaugurated, he's now been out of the White House longer than he was in the White House. You know, he's in a part of his life where he is no longer the center of action. He's instead on a tarmac trying to get his phone to track down his wife, Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, because he can't quite get through to her all the time. So, you know, it's a different world. At the same time, he's very, very active. He has what his own people call a restless engagement with the world, travels all the time, working on his foundation, giving speeches. Just on Friday, he gave one talk together with President Bush, right. The 43. And, he's finding his place in a new world.
Is that activity in some way, that kind of peripatetic sense of traveling and engaging, sort of an effort to find his place, to find something that he can ultimately settle into?
I think it is. And I think he's somebody who has spent his whole life trying to have impact and trying to have meaning. And I think that's what he still wants to do. It's not enough to simply go play golf and hit, you know, retirement circuit for him. He wants to have impact in all sorts of different ways you can interpret that. You know, he wants to have impact because of his foundation. He wants to have impact in terms of his legacy. He's still obviously very, you know, focused on making sure that people remember his presidency the way he remembers it.
Right. Is there a decision that Bill Clinton made somewhere in his post-presidential period that the international arena, that foreign policy, foreign affairs, would be where he would focus his energy and not really on any kind of a domestic agenda?
Well, I think it's easier for a former president, yes, to kind of play on the world stage in a way that you can't do if you're almost anybody else. And I think he wanted to do what he could without getting in the way of whoever would currently be president. Originally, that was George W. Bush, now it's Barack Obama. If he's working around the world to lower the cost of AIDS medicine for HIV-positive people in Africa and Latin America, if he's trying to find ways to help lower the energy usage of big buildings to combat climate change, these are things that don't conflict with American interests and therefore things he can work on and have some impact.
One of the things you talk about is his caution in dealing with the current administration, that he still has contact certainly with many of the people in the administration who also served him, but how he's trying to stay out of President Obama's way.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's very cognizant of that, obviously. Look, he was president with a former Democratic president still around, Jimmy Carter. He remembers that was a difficult situation for him. And remember, only two Democratic presidents in the last 140 years have lived long enough to see another Democrat in the White House. That's kind of an unusual circumstance. He's kind of determined, I think, to not cause problems, to be a good team player. Again, he has a particularly best interest, given that his wife is part of the team. She's right there at the head of the cabinet. So the last thing President Clinton wants to do is get in the way.
To what extent do you think that Bill Clinton's position and his attitude that you're talking about is really shaped or reshaped by the fact that Hillary is part of the administration, and how different would his role be, do you think, if she wasn't?
Well, I think it definitely is shaped by that. I think that, you know, when he does things or says things, he understands that in a sort of way he is a bit of a surrogate. You know, not in any official capacity, obviously, but as the spouse of a cabinet secretary and a former president, you know, he has a responsibility to to be careful about how he does things. He checks things with the National Security Council, for instance, before he makes any trips. He checks in with the National Security Advisor, makes sure it's okay with them. If he meets up with a Vladimir Putin at the Davos conference, he sends in a one-page memo or saying, you know, this is what we were talking about. You know, he would do some of that stuff even if Hillary were not in the cabinet, but that's certainly, I think, more so because she is.
One of the things that's fascinating about Bill Clinton's post-presidential years is the decision he made somewhere along the way to make peace with his enemies, people like Chris Ruddy and Richard Mellon Scaife and others.
Right.
Talk a little about that.
It's such a fascinating phenomenon involving Bill Clinton. You know, he is polarized and created a lot of people who both love him on the one side and hate him on the other, and he's never really satisfied if the people who hate him don't ever come around. And he, I think, is the kind of person who, in any room, if there's one person who's resistant to his charms, that's the person he ends up sort of focusing on the most until he feels like he's won them over. Chris Ruddy was a journalist in the 1990s who investigated a lot of the scandals. He, you know, he questioned the official version of Vince Foster's death in a prominent book called The Strange Death of Vincent Foster. He investigated cover-up theories with the death of Ron Brown. Not a Clinton supporter, one of the people who made Clinton's presidency so difficult. Today, they're friends. That's the way Chris Ruddy describes them. Ruddy says, look, I've come around to believe that maybe Clinton was not as big a liberal as I thought, and I've come to admire what he does with the foundation. I'm still a conservative, but I look at Clinton today differently than I did in the 1990s.
What impact did the campaign, the 2008 campaign, have on what Clinton, the path that he was on in terms of this sort of emeritus position?
I'm sorry, say that again?
What impact did the 2000 campaign really have on Clinton in terms of what he was trying to accomplish?
Well, I think the 2000 campaign was a big blow for Clinton. I mean, on the one hand, obviously, his wife got into the Senate. That's a big, big deal. But the fact that he couldn't put his own hand-picked vice president in the White House, and that some people blamed him for the fact that that happened because of the Monica Lewinsky scandal and the impeachment, that was a tarnish against his legacy. He understood that at the time. You could argue that he has spent the 8 years, almost 9 years now, since then, trying to, you know, write history again the way he wants it to be written. We talked about, during this interview, some of the interviews I've had with him, we talked about his role with the economy, which is an interesting question. The economy, obviously, that has tanked in the last few months. Some people have argued that President Clinton bore some blame for that because of some policies he embraced or didn't embrace during the 1990s. He gave me a very interesting and clinical answer to that. Very undefensive, very much willing to think about what exactly was his role, and he has come to the conclusion that he was wrong, at least in some respects, by not trying to regulate derivatives, those complex financial instruments that have been at the root of a lot of the financial problems.
You write about, in this piece in the Times Magazine section, and others have touched on, the impact that his heart surgery 6 years ago had on him. Talk a little about that.
Well, I think people underestimate, perhaps, just what a big ordeal that really was in his life. Keep in mind that he has lived longer than his father did, longer than his adopted father did, and he's always been very aware of his mortality. Then comes along, he has quadruple bypass surgery. Then, that's not even enough, he has complications with his lungs that require another operation 6 months later, and my father-in-law went through this, so I happen to know it's a very brutal set of conditions and operations that he had. He talks about this and says that it's taken away some of his stamina. He's not as he tires more easily. He blames it for some of the testiness and the irritability and temper that he showed on the campaign trail last year. But otherwise, he says that this has made him, when he's rested, a more laid-back person, less focused, less hopped up about small things than he used to be. So it's definitely had an impact.
Do you think that that's true? Do you think that he is mellower, as the title of the story indicates?
He's mellower this year. I mean, let's ask about next year, I guess. You know, Clinton tends to go through these cycles where he does things that attract great criticism, like he did last year on the campaign trail, and then he goes through this sort of redemption phase where he calms down and wins back a public that might have been mad at him. How many times that's happened in his career? We're in that redemption phase of his cycle right now.
What, if anything, does he have set as goals for himself at this point?
Well, on the personal level, he told me he wants to be able to create enough of a financial cushion for his family that should he drop dead tomorrow, they would have the freedom to do anything that they wanted to do, his wife and daughter. In terms of his foundation, he's really trying to sort of change the way NGOs operate in the world. That it's not enough to simply put money into a program and provide things for people. You have to change the way they do business, work with the private sector, work with government. A good example are these AIDS drugs. What they did was, it wasn't just a matter of let's provide assistance for people who are poor. What he did was they went to the pharmaceutical industry and said, hey, this is a big issue. Let's negotiate a contract which will guarantee you volume business, and in response, you'll give us a very cut rate price that we can give for the developing world. That has got 2 million people around the world right now on life-saving medication as a result.
Uh-huh. And what is his view of Obama and the administration at this point? Do we really know?
Well, it's hard to say. What's he going to tell us other than he's supportive? I think he genuinely is supportive. I think that he recognizes that it's in his interest and in the interest of the Democratic Party for Obama to succeed. At the same time, you know, there's got to be at least a little part of him that doesn't wants to be part of the action still. I mean, that he must look at this and say, I wish I were president right now and I were, in the midst of these very big issues, because I'm sure he feels like he's got positions on all of them. He told me pretty bluntly, I thought, he said, look, you know, if it weren't for the 22nd Amendment, still in there now, they'd put me out of there in a pine box. I loved it so much. But I understand that that's not the case, and I love what I'm doing now, and I'm at peace with that.
Does he have a sense of generational change? Forget the politics and the personalities, but a sense of generational change that has left him as part of the generation past.
I think that still shocks him a little bit. Yeah, I think because he was the boy president, right? That's
right.
What he was sometimes called. And he was always one of the youngest members of his generation to succeed at anything. And now suddenly he's 62 years old. And, you know, arguably, as he likes to put it, and he has for years, he says, I've got more days behind me than ahead of me. And I think, that dawning realization that another generation has come along was shocking to him in last year's campaign. He didn't quite understand how a young senator from Illinois that hadn't really done anything could upend his wife, who had spent all these years in the trenches. It's an adjustment, I think, as it would be probably for any 62-year-old.
Mm-hmm. And does he harbor any personal political aspiration still to serve in the Senate or to serve anywhere?
I don't think so. Nothing like that. He, you know, he's been appointed special envoy to Haiti by the United Nations.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a position many people were competing for. but I would be surprised to see him out there in the hustings again, sucking for votes and looking to get elected anything.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that we're going to see more of Bill Clinton in terms of future political campaigns, or is he had it after the last one?
Well, you know, that's a good question. You know, any campaign that his wife might still be involved with, obviously he would be out there. Other than that, I imagine he will do what he ought to do as a dutiful Democrat, but without necessarily making that an overwhelming part of his schedule. I think he enjoys the elder statesman, role better than the partisan attack dog role. It's just, it's not as natural a fit for a former president as it is for somebody who's, a governor or a presidential candidate.
Do you think that he's been shaped in any way in terms of his elder statesman views and his post-presidential role by his very close relationship with the elder George Bush?
Well, I think so. I think, this is a very, very small club, this former president's club. There are only four members of it that are alive right now. Two of them are Bushes. The other two are Clinton and Carter. Clinton and Carter aren't exactly great friends.
Right.
So, Clinton has become sort of a pal with the Bushes. He obviously worked on Hurricane Katrina relief and Asian tsunami relief with the elder Bush. And I think that helped seal a more friendly relationship with the younger Bush. They started off pretty tense in the year 2000 and 2001 when Clinton turned over the White House to the younger Bush. By today, though, they are, I think, reasonably called friends. Clinton told me he had checked in with younger Bush the other day, called him up to see how he was doing, offering any advice he might want for you know, about writing books and, you know, post-presidential life. And they stay in touch now. In fact, I think they stayed in touch in the last couple of years of Bush's presidency more than anybody really realized.
Has Clinton had his wings clipped very much by whatever agreements he had to enter into for Hillary to become Secretary of State?
It sure doesn't look like it. I mean, the agreement that he sealed with the Obama campaign required him to, you know, do certain things. He couldn't have any of his Clinton Global Initiative conferences overseas, for instance. And if he was going to take new money from foreign entities or, you know, have speaking engagements that might cause some conflict, he was required to check that out first with the administration's ethics people. But, you know, in following around for a couple months, I didn't really see anything that looked all that different. Mm-hmm. I think he's still playing the same role, still traveling the world and doing many of the things he wants to do, just trying to calibrate how he does that in the age of Obama.
And how does he view the fact that so many of his close confidants, people like Ron Emanuel, Larry Summers, and so many others, are a part of the current administration?
Well, on some level, that's a testament to him, right? Obama was somewhat scornful of the Clinton administration during the primaries last year, had, you know, some not very nice things to say about the Clinton presidency. But it turns out, as time has passed and he's actually taken over the White House himself, Obama has found some things to like about the Clinton presidency, most particularly its personnel. As you say, I mean, I think roughly about 40% of the people who have been nominated to Senate-confirmed positions had Clinton administration experience. For Clinton, that's something of a validation. It shows that, in his view, he picked a lot of very bright people who have gone on to bigger and better things. You know, it's also interesting, though, when you talk to them, I mean, some of those people who serve now in both administrations, some of them seem to be looking at this one as a chance for a kind of a do-over, if you will, mm-hmm. a chance to sort of accomplish the things that they maybe did not accomplish in the 1990s when Clinton was in office for various reasons.
There's also such a dramatic contrast, and I'm sure more will be written about this in the years ahead, such a dramatic contrast in style between the two presidents.
Oh, yes, very much so. On some level, they have similar intellectual appetite, I think, for policy, very, very engaged in the details of what they're doing. But otherwise, you know, different. I mean, you know, Clinton is gregarious. Clinton gets energy off of a crowd. Obama is reserved. He's diffident. He doesn't seem to really get juiced by, you know, by contact with people, per se. Obama, obviously, is a great orator. The way I like to put it is Obama is a speaker and Clinton is a talker. Clinton, you can't remember any memorable phrases from his speeches, per se, but he would always really engage an audience with sort of a talk through his thinking and his arguments about policies, and they would always sort of captivate an audience because they're pretty smart ways of thinking about things. Even if you didn't agree with him, he would be pretty engaging. There's a different style of engagement with the audience.
Is he still mad at the Kennedys?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he is. He's kind of very distressing, very hurtful in his view when Ted Kennedy and his niece Caroline Kennedy endorsed Obama last year rather than Hillary. You know, the former President Clinton sort of considered them family. He thought that all the time that he had spent with the Kennedys in the 90s, you know, they went boating off Hyannisport and all that, and he sent the planes to look for, you know, John Jr.'s plane when it went down, and Jackie Onassis had been so nice to Hillary when they came into the White House. He took that to think that they were, you know, family almost, and when he discovered that they weren't, and that the Kennedys were making a political decision about who they thought would be the next president, it really hurt the president. It really hurt President Clinton, I think.
But of course, they'll probably become friends again soon, too.
Well, that's right. As he said, look, I'm a Baptist. I believe in deathbed conversion. You know, never give up on anybody.
The New York Times' Peter Baker. His story, The Mellowing of William Jefferson Clinton, is the cover story in this past Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Peter, it's been a pleasure. I thank you so much.
Hey, thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.